Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This weekend, Tulsa will celebrate Pride Weekend. Now, given the events in Washington at the Supreme Court today with the decision in Dobbs versus Jackson, new worries are emerging about the right to privacy at the heart of the now overturned Roe versus Wade and a host of decisions that enshrine equal rights for all. Well, this Pride Weekend, that may be a center point, but it'll also be the last with Oklahomans for Equality Executive Director Toby Jenkins at the helm of the organization. For over 25 years, Jenkins has served OKEQ in a variety of roles from volunteer to executive director, where he served for the past 12 years. Pride kicks off tonight with a Rainbow Run 5K and Fun Run, continues tomorrow with a Pride Parade, kicking off at 13th and Boston and heading up Boston to 4th Street and east to the Dennis Neal Equality Center. That parade kicks off at 6 o'clock. The weekend concludes Sunday with the family picnic at Guthrie Green. I spoke with Toby Jenkins early this morning, just hours before the Supreme Court issued their decision overturning Roe versus Wade. Even before that decision, there have been plenty of legislative threats affecting LGBTQ plus rights, as well as the right to privacy. We spoke about some of them during our conversation, as well as previewed Pride. I hear from what you've said, this is going to be one of the largest Pride weekends ever here in Tulsa.
It'll actually be the largest in Oklahoma, in Oklahoma history. And so we're very excited about that.
Why do you suppose that is this year?
Well, first of all, last year was our largest. It was the largest on record. And so last year, everybody said it was probably because the pandemic had kept us away from each other and everybody was in the mood. You know, we had about a month where we thought everything was going to be so good because we finally had vaccines. And we were like one of the last big public events. And then, you know, we realized that COVID was still with us and still killing people. So everybody's explanation last year was that it was the post-pandemic resurge. And then this year shows up. And when we exceeded our, we actually oversold our vendor spaces. And we last year had 88. This year we've got 137 vendors. Right now we have 188 parade entries, and we've still got people registering who want to get us to the 200 plus mark. So I think people maybe feel safer because of treatments and things like that. COVID is something you can survive now for most people. I mean, it's personal to me because my brother died of COVID. So, you know, a touchy subject with me. I think maybe some of that is it, but also I feel like this past year in Oklahoma, the LGBTQ community has experienced such public policy attacks by our elected officials that I think like people are trying to show up this year to really show that they support the LGBTQ people, LGBTQ families, LGBTQ youth, and they do not believe that our legislators are setting the right tone or doing the right thing. Of course, there's only one way that can be changed is for us to replace them. But presently, we're stuck with them. And I think some of it is people showing up to support the LGBTQ community this year is probably their way of saying we affirm them. We've had lots of what I call meaningful moments as we've gotten ready this year. Lots of individuals have come forward and told us how it meant so much to them to be able to go to the parade and support their family members, or the first time they ever marched in the parade or ever attended a Pride festival. Just talked to an individual yesterday who's a company that we work with every year, helps us shut down the roads. And I've worked with this guy for 15 years on this festival when we have to close off the streets. And he proceeded just out of the clear blue to bring up that his 19-year-old daughter would be marching in our parade for the first time, and he and his wife would be there to show her support. And I just thought that was so encouraging to know that every day I'm interacting with families who this is important to them and their family. And until it impacts your family, until you have a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer individual in your family, or somebody who's non-binary or gender expansive, then, you know, you may have a perception that there's something wrong with people like that and that they're may violate your deeply held religious beliefs. But until you have someone in your family or somebody you deeply love who trusts you enough to be able to share with you their inner feelings and their inner identity, that you may can ignore it. But once, you know, it touches you personally, your family, you can either be mad about it because you think somebody's tricked them or talked them into it, or you can sit down and say to them, how can I support you? I love you, and I want you to feel supported by our family. And this is one of those experiences, you know, yes. Let's go to Pride together. And this year, you cannot drive anywhere in Tulsa, in any neighborhood, and not see at least a couple of rainbow flags flying on houses. People are really trying to show their support, and that's encouraging. But we also keep getting reports that people's flags keep being vandalized or stolen. I mean, our board president, she lives in Sand Springs, and she's had her flag stole twice this year.
I want to get back to the point you made about why Pride might be larger, and that has to do with the idea that people who are LGBTQ have experienced public policy attacks. And, you know, it seems like anytime we have progress on any issues, it's, you know, in America, it seems to be two steps forward, one step back. And it seems like we're in a place where we seem to be in a step back. I don't want to minimize what's going on, but with laws targeting the trans community being enacted, don't say gay bills that are passing in many states, how serious is the threats from these rights diminishing efforts in your view today?
Well, they're threatening to constitutional rights, you know, the right to privacy. There's a big debate if that's actually a part of a constitutional guarantee. But I do want you to know that I believe it is. I believe it's under the 14th Amendment. And I also believe that for several years, the highest court in the land has emphasized and sided with the private rights of its citizens. And everything from religion to reproductive choices to their voting rights to who they want to marry and if they can serve in the military. And I mean, they've made lots of decisions on that. And so it's been real confusing to see those so under attack and there be such aggressive steps directed down on the personal lives of individuals. And so when Oklahoma legislators decided this session, they want to be known for their ban on students being able to participate in extracurricular activities that would have improved that child's mental health and would have made them feel a part of a team. I mean, the most important lessons I ever learned were playing on sports programs in my school district. And I was a horrible athlete, but I was enrolled in everything. And it's where I learned some of the most important life lessons. And for legislators to say, we're going to isolate them from that, we're now going to make it impossible for them to find a bathroom that is safe for them and a bathroom that coincides with their identity. We're going to make sure that school counselors have to out them to their parents. And, you know, the only time a kid may feel like they can trust somebody is they need to talk to them about this until they understand it themselves. And so, you know, they tried to go after our library books. You know, for 50 years, Oklahoma has issued birth certificates that have allowed transgender persons to be able to amend their birth certificates so that it identified them for the gender marker where they had spent thousands of dollars on mental health issues, had counseling and medical procedures, and district courts had changed those gender markers, issued the orders to change the gender markers and the name changes. And then in one single signing, 50 years of Oklahoma issuing these amended birth certificates stopped. And the reason it stopped was because it was politically advantageous for them to pick out their fellow Oklahomans and say, we don't like you. You don't get to decide what your name is. And you don't get to decide for yourself what your body needs and make your own personal choices for your body and your mental health. We're not going to let you make those decisions. And just to show you how serious we are about it, we refuse to allow you to have the documents that you need, which are essential to your employment. It's essential to your health care. It's essential you having the documents. You just think, how many times do you have to walk into a place and you have to show your ID or you have to fill out a form and to have your documents match what's on the form are essential. And for transgender persons, they go to great lengths to be able to legally comply with those requirements on all of those opportunities where somebody's wanting to know what your name is and what your gender is and your age and your race and all of that. And yet here we've taken away something that, you know, for lawmakers for 50 years said was an individual's private right. So that's been very discouraging to see Oklahoma play with our lives like that. And it's, you know, it makes us resentful. And that's why this weekend with the Pride Weekend, it's our opportunity to celebrate. Someone asked me recently, why is this so important? Because I said, it's crucial to our visibility, it's crucial to our liberation and our equality. It's by being more visible where people can see us and know us and understand us that they can become more aware and understanding of what it's like to be us.
My guest today is Toby Jenkins, the Executive Director of Oklahomans for Equality. This is Pride Weekend with the Rainbow Run tonight, the Pride Parade on Saturday, and the Big Picnic at Guthrie Green on Sunday. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Not only has it been legislative attacks and public policy attacks, in fact, there have been disruptions at Pride events around the country, at the Idaho Pride Festival, and of course, another event at Alameda, California. Has that affected your planning?
Well, first of all, the Pride Parade and the Pride Festival is about the safest thing you can attend, and it has been for decades. We have always been soft targets in Oklahoma. I mean, the Equality Center, the windows have been shot up, the building's been vandalized. I've been held at gunpoint. I've been stabbed. I've had a 72-pound boulder thrown through my car window. And so for us, our visibility has always had a certain amount of risk, and we have always had to have very strong law enforcement presence for security reasons, and we've always had to take it serious. But what's happened is now the rest of the country has experienced mass shootings in their churches, their schools, their grocery stores. Any public event has turned into a target for somebody with an assault rifle to come out and hurt you for some kind of grudge that has nothing to do with you. So because of that, it's been amplified that any big public event, people are super nervous. And so you associate that with this parade is not always a parade that everybody's happy about. You add to that, that people are a little more anxious that we've made sure that security is its best. We have done everything within our ability to make sure that our festival and our parade are the safest. We've worked with law enforcement for years. This year we've had to increase, we were required by our insurance carrier to increase our security team. We did that. We added for our Pride Marshals on Tuesday night, had a special training on what to do with an active shooter. But then you have organizations and groups that have decided to try to harass in an organized way. I mean, we have always, Rich, always dealt with protesters who protest our parade. We're quite accustomed to that.
I don't think there's a Pride. There's not a Pride event in the country that hasn't had at least some visible protesters at their parades.
Right. But when they show up in an aggressive manner where they're to go in and disrupt and try to fight with people and cause problem. I mean, we for years have banned weapons in our festival grounds. We're able legally to do that because we closed the streets, put up a 12-foot fence around and a barricade around the place. There's public postings. And of course, you know, we have lots of individuals who are gun owners who have called us and said, you know, I'm super uncomfortable coming to Pride if I can't bring my gun for my own safety reasons. And we've told them, we certainly understand that anxiety, but our law enforcement, the hired security team, they will be there and they will be the ones to protect us if there was to be a situation such as someone was to try to come in and harm us. A couple of years ago, we had a group in the region who liked to show up with their assault rifles and march into public spaces, trying to emphasize their constitutional right. And they tried to come in our festival. They were told to leave. They refused. They were arrested, and we all had to go to court over it. And The courts ruled in our favor that it was a private event where we had paid the city of Tulsa to be able to close the streets and fenced it in. And so those are the steps that we've had in place for several years. This year, we've really had to make sure that people understood them. Yep. I mean, the one thing is we've had to, security had to get additional wands to and make sure that everybody knows they're going to check everything in your backpack and they're going to wand you before you can get into the festival. That's, you know, us making it as safe as it can be certainly reduces people's anxiety, and it certainly allows us to celebrate with a little more freedom. We also encourage people, don't go alone. You take somebody with you. You make sure your phone is charged. If you see something suspicious, you let somebody know. We want everybody, if they see something, we want them to say something. Even if you are not sure if it is something, you let us know so that our security teams and law enforcement can take that serious.
Well, let's change the subject a little bit to a brighter subject. You know, Toby, you've been working with OKEQ in some form or fashion, really, since you came out in the 1990s. How much has the climate in the city and the state changed for people who are LGBTQ plus since the time you've been working with Oklahomans for Equality?
Well, the year I came out, you know, I was fired by one elected official and passed around to a couple others. And finally, Sally Howe Smith had, the court clerk had mercy on me, and she would be willing to hire an avowed homosexual. Can't make that up. That's really what the other elected official said to her. Will you, you know, Toby's an avowed homosexual. Will you be willing to take him into your staff? And she did. And I appreciated that and considered her an important friend. When I came out in the 90s, very first thing that greeted me was Oklahoma legislators that introduced a bill that said I could not have custody of my children. And so I hunted down people to help address that. And that was this organization. And they've had my loyalty ever since. So I saw, you know, in the 25 years, there have been a lot of changes, a lot of improvements. The city of Tulsa has very good policies in place, anti-discrimination policies, protections for trans persons, access to health care and their insurance plans. So, I mean, I sit on Pride Street, 4th Street. Some cities have crosswalks. We have a whole street with pride signs on it. And the fact that the parade, the very first one, I think we had like 35 or 40 entries. And, you know, we're up to 200. And we have so many faith communities, so many companies and corporations who are there to show their support. Those are signs that, the times have improved. But when visibility of LGBTQ persons is now a part of mainstream TV and pop culture, but also there's lots of laws that have been protections, Supreme Court decisions, those are all amazing things. But what I have noticed that has made the biggest impact on me is the difference I'm seeing in rural Oklahoma. I mean, this year at the parade, we will have McAllister and Bartlesville and Muskogee and Ponca City, which is the hometown of Dennis Neal, our founder of our organization. They will be marching in the Tulsa Pride Parade because they've had their own picnics that we've assisted them with. And when I see pride picnics all across the state of Oklahoma, that lets me know that people living in rural areas, it's not enough that you can find the resources in Tulsa, but that you are able to identify the resources in your own community in rural Oklahoma. To me, that is the greatest sign of change, that the people living in those communities are willing to be out, or they're willing to show support for their LGBTQ family members, and they're willing enough to do it to have picnics and parades in their communities. That is very powerful to me, because it's one thing for me to be out and proud in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but it's a whole different thing when you're down in one of our smaller cities where it can be much more aggressive attacks. And we've saw that. Dustin Parker was murdered on January 1st, 2020. He was one of the founders of our McAllister chapter. They've still not identified the murderer. We had Aubrey Damon, who is a missing indigenous transgender woman. She's been gone now 3 years, Grove, Oklahoma. They've still not found her body or identified anybody who had anything to do with her disappearance. So in the smaller cities, down the turnpike, the places you whiz by when you're driving down the highway, those places are, there are LGBTQ persons living in those cities, and they're starting to be more visible. And surprisingly, their communities are being very supportive, or at least allowing them to be visible.
Let me ask you, how do those pride picnics in those small towns begin to change minds and perceptions within the community?
Well, so here's an interesting perspective, and this is just my perspective. It's certainly not necessarily gay mainstream. Gay mainstream is not super happy about the commercialization of pride and, you know, corporate marketing and stuff like that. But for me, when in at Ponca City Pride, we were there, and I noticed that there were people running around with pride t-shirts that I didn't recognize. And I stopped this mother and her child, and I said, "Where did you get your t-shirt?" And I thought she'd say Amazon. She said, "We bought it right here at the Walmart in Ponca City." And I kept thinking to myself, what was that conversation like when that mother and that child walked into Walmart? I can see that that kid probably said, "Mom, mom, mom," and just bugged them to death. "Can I have this? Can I have this?" And, you know, I just wanted to send a thing to Walmart, and I wanted to say thank you, because you allow this parent and this child to have this moment. And here they are at this picnic in Ponca City, in a city park that Dennis Neal's family used to have big cookouts for the 4th of July. He was quite emotional that day. And Sue Welch, who was one of our trustees, her and her wife were there, and she graduated from Ponca City. And they were all quite emotional that the very park that they grew up in their childhood, we were sitting there, and there was, you know, rainbow flags of every identity flying. And there were 500 people having a big picnic in Ponca City, Oklahoma. That is so impactful to me, that individuals are finding resources and that they feel empowered and encouraged. And of course, you know, there was lots of opposition. People weren't happy about it, but Ponca City let it happen, and we were there to witness it. And they'll be marching in the parade. They've got 5 hotel rooms filled up, and they're trying to stack them in there like cordwood, because they're coming to march in the Tulsa Pride Parade for their very first time.
Well, as many people know, this will be your final Pride as executive director of OKEQ. You've been there for over a decade as the executive director, working in various roles at the Equality Center for 25 years or more. Have you had time to take stock of the growth of the Equality Center and what this weekend means to you personally?
Well, thank you. I think Councillor Krista Patrick at City Hall, she said, "I'm not stepping down, I'm stepping back." But my role will be changing. And I chose the term stepping down because that's what drag queens do. We have pageants every year to elect new title holders. And so I'm going to keep my sash and my crown, and they made sure I had one. And I'm just going to step down, and fresher, younger individuals who got better ideas and have the resilience and the vigor and the energy to finish the work that has to be done. I hope in my lifetime I'll see it done. I mean, I've saw a lot of changes. You know, my personal experience, I went through a lot when I came out, and I didn't know anybody in the LGBTQ community, and I didn't get any help from them necessarily to come out. I mean, I went into the library, the downtown library, and Mary Lee Wadner was a mm-hmm. librarian, and Nancy McDonald with PFLAG, they connected and decided they were going to have a display in one of the display cabinets at the downtown library before it ever been renewed. And I worked over the courthouse, and I could walk in there and I could see that display, and found a book, Stranger in the Gate, by Mel White, who had been one of my seminary professors. And I read that book, and it gave me the courage to come out and in my marriage and parent my children and, you know, live the life that I knew that I should be living, and not living this fakeness. So those moments in the 90s, I've always told Nancy McDonald and Mary Wadner that they knew I was there. They just didn't know my name yet. And so that was a resource. And I found it in our public library, and it was there for somebody who needed it. And I've always told Dennis Neal, I'm so grateful that he and the other folks in the late 70s decided to organize this community. And they first thing they did is they felt like they needed a helpline. And so They went down, and in those days, before most of your listeners were ever born, you could go to the phone company and you could buy the phone number and it'll spell out something. And so they bought the number 918-743-4297, which spells out the gays. They thought that was super clever. And so, Rich, that's important. This to my point here is, in that time, at that period, that helpline was in the back room of a gay bar. And I called that helpline in the early 80s. But I remembered that number. I mean, 918, the gays, it was easy. And when I needed that phone number, I called that number in the 90s and always told Dennis Neal that I appreciated that they had a place prepared for me. You know, it would be 15 years before I ever had the courage to be who I was and be able to live my authentic life. But they had it prepared for me. Now, the important thing of this story is that in the early 80s, a faith-based university, Oral Roberts University, would have students who felt like that Jesus wanted them to keep that phone number blocked. So they would call that phone line and keep it blocked so that people could not get through on the gay helpline. Today, at the Dennis Arnell Equality Center, we have Oral Roberts University social working interns answering that same helpline because their university feels like they need to have experience working with this population, marginalized community. They're going to be social workers. They need to know how to be culturally competent in our issues. And at the same time, realize that they're not there to convert us or to save us. They're there to make sure that our mental health and our access to services is guaranteed. And so the university places them here. We've had Oral Roberts University interns for 3 years now, have a couple of them each semester. They're some of our best interns. And to me, that's the description of how I, in my short time here, I saw things so dramatically improve and change. And people that used to be at odds with us are now willing to at least have a conversation. Let's better understand each other. And it's not the love the sinner, hate the sin. It's more, you know, this is your private life, is God's business, and that's between you and him. That's not our business at all. We're here to make sure you have access to resources and that you're here and you get a friendly, warm, welcoming, and affirming voice when you call this helpline. Yeah. That, to me, is the evidence that slowly, and especially in this part of the, you know, state, we're trying to do a better job of serving all of our community.
Toby, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Happy Pride.
Toby Jenkins is the executive director for Oklahomans for Equality. I spoke with him early this morning, just hours before the Supreme Court released its decision overturning Roe v. Wade. We talked about the threats to equal rights here in the state and around the country, as well as Pride. A Pride weekend is going on in Tulsa with the Pride Parade on Saturday and the picnic at Guthrie Green on Sunday. You can learn more at okeq.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.